Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
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 Reading this morning from Canto 1, Chapter 5, Text 14.
Taton yata kinchana yat vichakshataha.
Taton yata kinchana yat vichakshataha.
Pratak drishas tat krita rupa namibihi.
Pratak drishas tat krita rupa namibihi.
Nakarhichit kvapi chadushtatamatir.
Nakarhichit kvapi chadushtatamatir.
Labheta vatahata naur evaspadam.
Labheta vatahata naur evaspadam.
Tato nyata kinchana yat vichakshataha.
Tato nyata kinchana yat vichakshataha.
Pratag drishas tat krita rupa namabihi.
Pratag drishas tat krita rupa namabihi.
Nakarhichit kvapi chadushtatamatir.
Nakarhichit kvapi chadushtatamatir.
Labheta vatahata naur evaspadam.
Labheta vatahata naur evaspadam.
Tataha, from that,
anyata,
apart, kinchana,
something,
yat,
whatsoever,
vivakshataha,
desiring to describe,
pritak, separately. Drishaha,
vision.
Tat krita,
reactionary to that.
Rupa,
form.
Namabihi,
by names.
Nakarhichit,
never.
Kvapi,
any.
Cha,
and.
Dushtatamatihi,
oscillating mind.
Labheta,
gains.
Vata ahata,
troubled by the wind.
Now,
boat.
Eva,
like.
Aspadam,
place.
Translation. Whatever you desire to describe that is separate in vision from the Lord simply reacts with different forms, names, and results to agitate the mind as the wind agitates a boat which has no resting place. Report by Srila Prabhupada. Sri Vyasadeva is the editor of all descriptions in the Vedic literatures, and thus he has described transcendental realization in different ways, namely for fruitive activity, speculative knowledge, mystic power, and devotional service. Besides that, in his various Puranas, he has recommended the worship of so many demigods in different forms and names. The result is that people in general are puzzled how to fix their minds in the service of the Lord. They are always disturbed about finding the real path of self-realization. Srila Naradeva is stressing this particular defect in the Vedic literature is compiled by Vyasadeva, and thus he is trying to emphasize describing everything in relation with the Supreme Lord and no one else. In fact, there is nothing existent except the Lord. The Lord is manifested in different expansions. He is the root of all. He is the root of the complete tree. He is the stomach of the complete body. Pouring water on the root is the right process to water the tree, as much as feeding the stomach supplies energy to all parts of the body. Therefore, Srila Vyasadeva, here it is. Srila Vyasadeva should not have compiled any Puranas other than the Bhagavad Purana, because a slight deviation from that may create havoc for self-realization. If a slight deviation can create such havoc, then what to speak of deliberate expansion of ideas separate from the absolute truth personality of Godhead? The most defective part of worshipping demigods is that it creates a definite conception of pantheism, ending disastrously in many religious sects detrimental to the progress of the principles of the Bhagavatam, which alone can give the accurate direction for self-realization in eternal relation with the personality of Godhead by devotional service in transcendental love. The example of the boat disturbed by whirling wind is suitable in this respect. Final sentence. The diverted mind of the pantheist can never reach the perfection of self-realization due to the disturbed condition of selection of object. Okay, so back to the verse one more time. Tatonyata kinchana yad vichakshitaha pratak drishas tatkrita rupa nama bihi nakarhachit kvapi tadushtata matir. Oscillating mind. Labheta vatahata nor ivaspadam. Whatever you desire to describe that is separate in vision from the Lord simply reacts with different forms, names, and results to agitate the mind, as the wind agitates a boat which has no resting place. This particular instruction is Narada's indication to Vyas why he's not satisfied, and why the reader of the other compositions are in turn not going to, if he's not satisfied, how are they going to be satisfied? If he's not peaceful, how is the reader of his writing going to be peaceful? So the application specifically is in relation to that other portion of the Vedas. But we'll spend some time this morning extending that to other aspects of life where, let's say, where Vedic teachings contact. Because we'll go to the very basis of this statement. Stated positively and negatively. Positively is everything comes from Krishna. Prabhupada said it this way. There's two things and there's not a third thing. There's Krishna and there's that which comes from Krishna, and there's not a third thing. Or stated in a different way, there is no void in the creation of God. Because what does void mean? It's the absence of Krishna or Krishnas. And there's no such thing as something that's neither Krishna nor coming from Krishna. So there's no such thing as void in the creation of God, because whatever exists is God, or what that which has come from God. There's not a third thing. That's stated positively. negatively is the Chaturasloki, one of the Chaturasloki verses of the Bhagavatam. Very important understanding. It's a definition of Maya. What's Maya? Maya, yeah, we use it all the time. Oh, Prabhu, you're Maya. Or I say it about myself, I'm just in Maya. So what does that mean? The Bhagavatam defines Maya, the very same context as here, as seeing something that has value, substance, meaning. Artha is the word that's used. Something of value separate from the existence of God or the source of emanation. There is no such thing. But seeing that there is such a thing, that's Maya. That's the illusory energy. It looks like, but it isn't. The classic example is a mirage. Looks like water. It's not water. Especially the classic again is water in a desert. A desert mean there's no water. You see, desert in a water, it's a mirage. It's something. It's the sunlight reflecting on silicon and it looks like water. You can see it on the road sometimes. It looks like water. Blazing hot road in the summer, you're driving along, it looks like, oh, there's all this water in the road. Not water in the road, it's blazing hot tar. There's no water in the road, but it looks like it. It's just a reflection. It's something else, but it's not what it appears to be. That's Maya. There is no substance, but it looks like it's substantial. Artha. There's something of value. So, that literature, which describes something to be of value, because that's what Vyas, the context here is now the literature that Vyas composed, where it looks like there's something of value devoid of the conception of its connection with the Supreme. It's Maya, Prabhu. And how does that work? It just agitates the mind. So now we'll go to the metaphor that's here. There's 1, 2, 3, and then it's compared to 1, 2, 3. So there's a wind. And what happens when there's a wind in a body of water, lake, pond, river, or ocean? When there's wind, the wind causes waves. The wind's causing waves, and then there's a boat that's not secured or moored or under some other care or protection other than the wind and the waves, and what happens? The boat becomes disturbed. So now we have this other similarly, that's the simile, so similarly there's a conception or a vision or a perception that something exists apart from the Supreme. That's Maya, it doesn't. But take that conception, connect it to Nama Rupa Adibihi, names, forms, and results from the translation, Tatkrita Rupa Nama Bihi. What do you get? You get dushtata matir. You get a mind that's like the boat, disturbed. And when the mind is disturbed, how you can fix it? The answer is you can't. It's disturbed. And the application of this verse is Narada speaking to Vyasa about the other literatures that he composed that will not bring the mind to its point of stillness. Even like the boat, there may be wind, there may be waves, But if the boat is secured in a resting place, the boat is not disturbed. So people that live near bodies of water, and they have a boat, they have a way of securing the boat. Otherwise, the boat's gone as soon as the wind comes. It's gone. So they secure it. Some kind of system, at least an anchor, but even better, they lift it, some kind of lift, and it's out of the water. So down here is all this disturbance, and the boat is fine. It's like, a bridge that goes over the water, and they have, at least in the course of my travel, I've experienced in Guyana, they have bridges that float on the water. And so when there's waves, the bridge is going like this while you're driving or walking or whatever you're doing. It's, it's just like you're on the boat, only you're on the bridge. It's a floating bridge. But if it's a bridge that's above the surface of the water, it's like the Bhagavad Gita example of the lotus, remains untouched. There can be a big storm. The lotus is doing fine. Down here is all this turbulence, and the lotus is very happy, swaying a little bit, but remaining undisturbed. So the mind of the transcendentalist is like that, even in the midst of disturbance. And is it a matter of discipline? Somebody's got this superpower mind or something, and then they can remain undisturbed. Well, that helps. Having Vridhavrata certainly helps. But what's being pointed to here is having a conception that everything is related to the Supreme. And when the conception is everything is related to the Supreme, that is the resting place. And the conception that when applied to names and forms and the reactions of names and forms of things, the mind remains undisturbed. It's seeing everything in relation to Krishna, which is reality. Seeing things separate from Krishna is illusion, it's Maya. And when you're in Maya, the mind is disturbed. And this is the sequence, how it works. We'll go through it one more time. There's wind. It agitates the water, and thus agitates the boat that's on the water. Similarly, the conceptions or perception that something exists apart from the Supreme. Mix that with forms and, things of this world, objects, names, and the reactions and interactions. It starts with the misconception. And then there's stuff out there. We have our misconceptions about stuff out there, and the mind's agitated. The problem is over here, the conception that something exists apart from the Supreme. So we need to fix that conception. We need a spiritual conception. When we apply ourselves in devotional service with a spiritual conception, we're at least starting off on the right foot. We have our conditioned tendencies, and the next step may be, whoa, I forgot everything. What happened? Let me go back. Okay, everything comes from Krishna. Now I take my next step. Okay, that's everything's still connected to Krishna. And just keep practicing like a child learning to walk. Practicing to walk. Walking propensity is there. It's natural that everything is in relation to Krishna because everything's in relation to Krishna. The topic this evening about relationships is going to make the same point in terms of relationships. Is it possible to have a functional relationship with another person devoid of conception of God? The answer is no, because God is within the heart of every living being. If we're going to accept the other person, we also accept that within the heart of that living being, that other person, God is there. And in the very language of this verse, he becomes the mutual object of both parties. We're the subject, he's the object. We're subjects and subjects of the king. We have that term. The king and his subjects. Well, in our case, it's Krishna is the object. He's the king of kings. And we're the subjects. And we're subjects. We want to have nice Vaishnava relationships, subject to subject, because there's a common object. But if that common object suddenly disappears, then you have what this verse is describing. You have a mind that's guaranteed. Like, you can't make it otherwise. It's guaranteed. You're going to have dushtata matir. The language the Prabhupada has used to translate it is gentle. The oscillating mind. But, you know, it's anger, frustration, quarrel, and all kinds of very painful things people don't like, so they want to make it nice. Like yesterday, put a nice wrapper on it and a ribbon and a bow and spray it with a little perfume and it's nice. But it's not nice. It's a fundamental misconception. You have to fix the fundamental misconception in relationships, in work, in interactions with matter of any category. Back to the direct instruction of Narada to Vyasa, it's in relation to the compiling of Srimad Bhagavatam, because the question back in chapter 4 was, how did the Bhagavatam appear? Just like we might say, how did Ramchandra appear, or how did Sita appear, or how did Krishna appear? Something. Please describe that. Krishna Janmashtami. So this question is, how does the Bhagavatam appear? Because the Bhagavatam is the literary form of Krishna. So how did the literary form of Krishna appear? That was the question. So to precede the Bhagavatam appearing is Vyas compiling all the other Vedas and feeling this dushtata matir, or he's not feeling yenatma suprasediti. He's not feeling satisfied, and we all know that feeling too well. So it addresses our concern. How do we become satisfied? How do we become internally deeply satisfied? Given we're like a boat in the middle of an ocean and there's wind. Or we're living entities within this material world that's filled with all kinds of activities, karma, and modes of nature, and manifestations of those modes of nature through different actions and different speech, and, you know, it's a lot of chaos. How do we become satisfied and peaceful? Because the yesterday's purport is, Prabhupada is saying specifically, he wants that. The purpose of the Bhagavatam is to bring that, usher that into the world. And he as its author, or translator, and Vyasa as its author, wanted that, and Narada wanted that. So, how can that be possible? We have to fix this one. At the root. The conception of things in relation to the Supreme. So, in the purport, Prabhupada is specifically speaking about demigod worship. Pratak drishas tat pratarupa namabihi. There's, in Bhagavad Gita, there's the verse 9:15. Ekatvena pratak tvena Bahuda Vishvato Mukham. You know that verse? In a very very liberal manner, Krishna is describing various forms of worship that he considers, in his most liberal mood, to be also devotional service. It's right after the verse, Satatam kirtayanto mam yatantascha dritapatra namayantascha mam bhaktya nitya yukta upasate. Then he describes others. Jnana yagena chapyanye yajanto mam upasate. There's others who also worship me, and who are those? Ekatvena, Pratak Tvena, Babuda, Vishvatom, Mukam, those who worship the one without a second, the many, Pratak Tvena, Bahuda. What's that? It's a demigods. This word, Pratak, what happened here? Here it is. Means separately. Pratak Bahuda. Just like Krishna describes his energies in the 7th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Bhina Prakriti. Ashtada. Bhina means separated. Prakriti. Bhina Prakriti or Ashtada. Those are the material energies that are the 8 separated energies. Bhumi Rapo Nalo Vayu Kamano Buddha Eva Chya. So, ahankar iti ame bina. Bina is very similar to pratak. Separately, bahuda means many. That's the demigods. Pratak dvena, having the quality of separateness, and there's many of them. And one who worships me, so the intention is worshiping me, but not having a clear conception of the source of everything, it's then many. It's called Hinduism. Where so many, too many. I like this one, I like that one, I like the combination of this one and that one and those. That's my worship. But we're all worshiping God because we're Hindus. No conception of what's the Supreme. And where did that no conception of what's Supreme come from? Vyasa is on his case, or Narada is on Vyasa's case. You did it. Or, you encouraged it by writings that don't clearly identify the source of the Supreme. So why do we spend so much time identifying who is the Supreme? Be nice. So many Supremes. Why this discrimination here? Hindus are very accommodating. This one, that one. We don't mind. We're very tolerant. Our Hindu religion is very tolerant. There's so many. That has been fostered by the literature that Vyasa composed that did not sufficiently explain what's the source. Yes, pratak dvena bahuda, but so where are those demigods coming from, and where are the powers of the demigods coming from? And the benedictions that they dispense, where is the capacity coming from? Coming from the Supreme. And therefore, in the same chapter, chapter 9, Krishna describes that worship that's done unto the demigods is meant for me alone. And one might say, well, that was their intention anyway. Meant for the Supreme. They just don't have a clear conception of the Supreme. It's meant for me alone, and therefore their worship is of impure intelligence, of Ashuddha Buddhaya. It's wrongly directed. It's like, I don't know. If you don't know who something belongs to, and you give it to somebody else, here you go, sir, this is for you. But that somebody else happens to know that it's not theirs, it belongs to a third person. So they give it to the third person. It's if they're honest. So the second person could say, thank you very much, however, it belongs to that person over there. Just, you can give it to them, or I'll give it to them, but it belongs to that person over there. Oh, okay. And what does everything belong to? It belongs to that person over there. Everything comes from Krishna. Otherwise, what's your conception of God? The conception of God, the absolute truth in Vedanta, aphorism number 2. The first one says, the purpose of this human form of life is to inquire into that. The absolute truth. And what's the absolute truth? Number 2. That from which everything comes. So if you don't bother to find out what everything comes from, then the object or the goal is not clear. And if the goal or the object is not clear, good luck getting there. It's like, you know, getting in your car and going for a ride, and somebody asks you, where are you going? And the answer is, I don't know. Just going for a ride. I hope you get there. And life is but a ride, or life is but a journey. Or there's a little children's rhyme, row, row, row your boat gently down the stream. Merrily, 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 life is but a dream. You've heard that one? Ramya, you've heard that one? Where are you going? I don't know. I'm on a journey. Well, what are you looking for? I don't know. Just journeying. Looking for satisfaction and happiness and peace and tranquility. And there's so many literatures, there's so many lives. Lived, you know, they have it, they have a name for it, journey literature. Just because that's what people do. So they make this like hero that he's on this journey. And the Iliad and the Odyssey. You know, classic literature that's just journeying, looking for, who knows what they're looking for? They don't know what they're looking for either. Like something higher, something ultimate. But what is that something ultimate? The Vedanta is very clear. That from which everything comes, that's the ultimate. And if you don't have a clear conception, this is the result. So Vedic literature should have this result, should have this very clear understanding. And those who are trying to follow the Vedas to reach that Supreme should have a clear understanding what the Supreme is, by definition at least. Otherwise, it agitates the mind. Rupa Goswami, in his Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, has written, Shruti Smriti Puranadi Panchara Triki Vidhim Vina Aikuntiki Harer Bhaktir Utpattayaiva Kalpate, which means that, in simple language, for those who are on a spiritual path, statements that are made about what's what must be supported by the scriptures. If not supported by scriptures, it's simply a big disturbance. And there's lots of that that goes on in the world. Big disturbance for want of understanding what the absolute truth is, at least in principle. So, Prabhupada's point is, therefore, Srila Vyasadeva should not have compiled any Puranas other than the Bhagavad Purana, because a slight deviation from that may create havoc for self-realization. So if he wasn't supposed to do it, why did he do it? Because here it is, you know, thousands of years later, and so many generations of people being confused? And the answer is, well, if there was only one thing, and that is surrender unto Krishna, there wouldn't be too many followers of that. I don't want to surrender to Krishna. The very reason we're in this material world is because we didn't want to do that. We're here with an issue with Krishna. So then the only thing that you can do is get over it and surrender to Krishna. Well, I don't know if I want any part of that. So then they're unregulated. So better that it's regulated. But as soon as there's regulated, then what happens? It's like Prabhupada's description of regulation of, for those who will not abstain from alcohol. So then the government regulates it. But does that stop people from taking alcohol? Meat eating with regulation. And then they point to the scriptures. Look, I was just hearing Prabhupada this morning. In the scripture, in the Bible it says Christ ate fish. Whether he did or not is another thing. But does that mean, okay, open up slaughterhouses all over the place and kill all those animals and because Christ ate fish at the Dead Sea? Whether he did or not even. You know, a little discrepancy, a little slight deviation creates havoc. So, no. And that's all. No. Try that with your children. It's not going to work. So, then he says, even if a slight deviation can create such havoc, then what to speak of deliberate expansion of the idea of the ideas separate from the absolute truth, personality, Godhead. So, literatures, whether scripture or other literatures, that go down the path, however nicely composed with literary skill, and there's so many writers, so many qualified writers, and aside from writers, people that can do things that are so nice, but devoid of a conception, deliberate, devoid of the conception of the Supreme. And there's a lot of that out there. It's like, that's very fashionable. Ethical agnosticism. Or even take, I want to spend a little bit of time, and I'll end, a little bit of time with the Bridge Preaching Conference that we took part in. Rupa and Jivana Jiva and I were there for that last weekend in the Potomac Temple. There's the concern that the followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would like the world to receive his message. For the world to want to receive his message, one thing is we have to be genuine and pure. But also, the perception needs to be, this is relevant and relatable. So, bridge preaching, or the bridge, building bridges conference was how to make ourselves, consciously make ourselves more relevant and relatable to people. And one of the issues that we tussled with was how to not end up in the soup like this. So a short essence is somebody out there has a value and we're over here. So we can just like build a wall and say, you know, we don't share your values, sir, so you know we can't relate to you and you can't relate to us. See you later. But if we can see their value, that which is important to them, that the phrase that's used commonly is needs, interests, and concerns. You've probably heard this, though, you have professional training, marketing especially. Needs, interests, and concerns. So over there's somebody, or a group of somebodies with a certain interest. So, and we're over here. We have a different set of values, and they have a different set of values. But they see this, they have an interest, or they have this need, or they have a concern. So a bridge method is you you're over here, you build a bridge to where they are, you go over on the other side of the bridge and you hang out with them a little bit, with where their interests are. It should not be, one of the cautions that came from this conference was, don't be manipulative or phony, where you really don't care at all about what they care about. You're just like pretending to care about it. And then, you know, beneath the cloak is a dagger, and you just, then you drag them across the bridge back to your side. Don't do that. There should be some genuine concern for the person and taking an interest in whatever their interest is. And we would want to take interest in something that clearly has a connection with Krishna or bhakti. Let's say yoga groups. They have an interest in yoga. There's like, you know, yoga society. That's a thing that's going on. People reaching out to yoga societies, even becoming yoga instructors to instruct people that have an interest in yoga. And it shouldn't just, if it's just a strategy that you really don't care about yoga, you don't care about their interest in health and fitness and so on, although that's not the purpose of yoga ultimately, that's what their concern is. So if there's a genuine concern, and then because of that connection with them, point to the bridge. It is a very nice bridge. Mm-hmm. And the people that are on the bridge and on the other side of the bridge, they're very nice people. So you can go one step with them because you've met them in their territory. So how this verse applies to that message is very direct. As devotees, when we're meeting people in their comfort zone, you know, they're the things that are important to them, we should always maintain a sense of who we are, never abandon that sense of our value is transcendental love for Krishna. That's our value. But something over there, somebody doesn't have that value, but they value something. We recognize there's a relation between that something and devotion to Krishna. So we share and appreciate that value which they have. And then, in sequence, help them understand how that value connects with devotion to Krishna. It's something like, you know, supposing someone's a little further along in their path of bhakti, even if it's very new to them, like at the Washington University program, that Chinese girl, I guess, she had apparently never had any contact at all with anything that we're doing, but asked all these nice questions, and it just went on and on, and ended up, here's some beads, and we did some chanting together, and she ended up going home with a bead bag and beads, and, you know, chant 15-20 minutes every morning, like from zero to something very substantial, to a commitment, at least to experiment or experience. So just referring to that example, that was very direct, that exchange, but it started with what the yoga ladder is, and there was lots of discussion about, you know, dhyan, dharana, and samadhi, what the difference of them is, and, you know, this thing and that thing. It was information. It wasn't practices of bhakti. It was just curiosity. But more than curiosity, when given something genuine, some practice, because the question was how to practice. Supposing it doesn't happen that quickly, it may take some numbers of exchanges with some people that we're in contact with. Families, Indian people, American people, whatever it is, some gradual getting a sense of who we are, who they are, and some relationship based upon who we are, who they are. Like just some friendship with some common interest. And the common interest can then, as servants of Krishna, because that's who we are, we don't pretend to be anything other than servants of Krishna, because that's who we are. But in service to Krishna, we can serve this interest that they have, help to grow it, and then show its connection with Krishna. The value, so what last time, the value is that it's, here's a soul on a path to Krishna somehow, however indirect, there's something that's helping them move on their path to Krishna, however indirectly. They don't even exactly, because they're just out journeying, not even knowing where they're going, but there's something in their life that they value, that much they know. They value relationships, or they value health, or they value something. They value the values of today's society strongly are social activism and environmentalism. That's something they value. So we can connect with people on the platform of that which they value. Help them do it. And then, in turn, show its connection with Krishna. And here's how we do it. As long as you're doing it, you can show them. So it's not phony. It's not hypocritical. It's not a ploy or, you know, a cold strategy. It's something that's very genuine. People may value their children. They may value family values. So we should, if that's something that we also value in Krishna consciousness, we can share with them on that platform. And then our world opens up. And the bridges open up. We're not cloistered individuals, as we're sometimes perceived. We, the Hare Krishna people, just keep to themselves. And there's a reason that we keep to ourselves, because there's a lot of material contamination. And in the beginning stage, like Prabhupada gives the example of a tree. When you plant a tree, common is you put a fence around the tree. Even if it's a tree, not like, you know, just a garden, but a tree. But for a while you have a fence so that animals don't come and so on. And after some time the tree's grown and grown and very strong. You don't need that little fence anymore. But in the beginning you need that little fence. So that separating ourselves from worldly-minded persons may be the best thing. It's not just a strategy, it's just our well-being. And also that person that's trying to begin Krishna consciousness, their struggle is breaking away from their attachments. So they need to distance themselves more than a person who is mature in their Krishna consciousness. But the person who is mature in their Krishna consciousness also has to be, you know, have their thinking cap on. They have to have a clear sense of who they are from a spiritual perspective. And this is an act of compassion, born of mature stage of Krishna conscious development, that I can reach out to others. But if my own house is not in order, how can I, what am I going to do? Invite people into a state of confusion. So our charity begins at home, but there are ways we can reach out to people, not just only and directly give them the nine processes of Shuddha Bhakti. Those processes of bhakti have things that are of value, that the rest of the world sees as value, but they may not see Shuddha Bhakti as of value. So we can, that's our topic of the Building Bridges Seminar. The final sentence in the purport, the diverted mind of the pantheist, so again this is prithak drishas, seeing separate, so whether it's different demigods as the object of worship, or it can be other types of prithak, the separateness of things that are seen to be of value in this world. Such a mind, the diverted mind, can never reach the perfection of self-realization due to the disturbed condition of the selection of object. So, an important part of our mission or message of Krishna consciousness is the methodology of the Bhagavatam, pointing to the object, Krishna. Everything connects with Krishna. And showing how that connects with Krishna. And just as that girl was asking at WashU, how do you do it? You know, what's the technique of practicing this? That's our role, to assist others in understanding the object and the practice of living that life directed towards the object. And that's a nice life, life of Krishna consciousness. Any comments or questions? Yes?
Maharaj, I'm confused about why the second canto begins with conceptions or forming conceptions of God that seem to be not so much in line with this verse.
Because it leads to the other. Following chapter 1 is chapter 2. Following chapter 2 is chapter 3. For persons who aren't at chapter 3 yet, it helps them to have chapter 1. For persons that don't even have a conception of God, because that then to form a conception of God based upon things that they are in touch with, which is manifestations of matter. How to see manifestations of matter in such a way that a seed conception of the Supreme is there. It's as Prabhupada says repeatedly in the second canto, this is for neophytes. So we can, if the audience was like that girl at George Washington, or at Washington University, you can go right, you know, to the top floor. You don't have to go to that one, chapter 1, canto 2. But for some people, they're not ready to go to chapter 3. They need chapter 1. They need to see the world in such a way that there's a conception of God somehow and those things that I can see. It's Vedic. It's part of the absolute truth, the creation.
So, even though that is part of the Bhagavatam, that's not in the other sections of the Vedas. So even in
it's in the other sections of the Vedas, and there's multiple places in the Bhagavatam where the universal form is described. Mm-hmm. It's look this way, look that way, look up, look down, look any direction. What do you see? Matter. How do we connect matter to the Supreme? When we've been, we got this attitude thing towards the Supreme. Well, at least see, conceptually, the creation has its relation to the Creator. That's there in every religion. The Bible says it, the Quran says it, and the Vedas say it. The description is so much more complete by including that. Other than just say, God the Creator. Well, the world that believes that God is Creator doesn't act in relation to the world as if He's the Creator. He may be the Creator, but we're the enjoyer. And that's not right. The Creator is the enjoyer. It's a more complete conception of the Supreme, even in terms of matter, what to speak of a more complete conception of the Supreme as Paramatma, what to speak of a more conception of the Supreme as Bhagavan. So therefore it's there. It's a science with deep understanding. Anything else? Yes.
We are here because we want to enjoy something. So, Krishna created this material world, and we have the free will, and when He has created this material world just to enjoy, then how...
Well, it's not just to enjoy. There's a second reason. The second reason is to help us learn that trying to enjoy isn't going to work. It's a house of rectification, not only a house of imprisonment.
How even to have the second thing of enjoyment, how did we get into that misconception of praying to demigods to satisfy or just to get whatever we need?
Well, it's a two-step. One is, to come here, we're all card-carrying anti-Krishna people. We've got an issue with Krishna. Or we wouldn't take birth here. The second is, according to the modes of nature, the mode of goodness says, well, I want to be pious, however that might be described. But I have this other card too, the anti-Krishna card, and I want to be pious card. So, but I want to enjoy. So these folks, these demigods, these exalted agents of the Supreme, they'll take care of my needs. And I've got a lot of needs, or at least a lot of wants. And so this one will take care of that one, that will take care of that one, that will take care of that one. So my pious card is being fulfilled, and my anti-Krishna card is also. Those are meant to help us come to the position where we're recognizing beyond I want, that the description is, in order to perform the Vedic sacrifices, you have to have a qualified priest. So built into that system is I get elevated association. Although I may not be so elevated, I'm pious, but I'm not so elevated. I get that association. And then the ritual itself is connected to the Supreme. I'm getting that benefit also. That elevation is also there. Then if all of these procedures are not only for this life, but for the next life, then the light starts to go on. Hey, there's life after this life. There's something eternal. What am I doing for that which is eternal? So that leads one to the Jnana section of the Vedas. What is this? I want to learn more about the eternal. And from learning of the eternal soul to the Supreme Soul, and then our relationship with the Supreme Soul. That's for people that, you know, that first card is a real strong one. I've got an issue. I don't want to surrender. I want to be pious. And that's within the Vedic conception, but those people that have drifted further from the Vedas, like a lot of people today, even people from India, but even aside from people from India, there's this idea of be pious, be spiritual, but don't be religious. You've heard that? It's common. It's growing strongly. And it's just mush. You know, there's no standard of what is spiritual. It's just being spiritual. Oh, they're a very spiritual person. But what does that mean? Generally, it means mode of goodness. They're a good person. They're, you know, very sensitive, and they're concerned about, you know, mode of goodness things. But it's, as far as this message is concerned, it's Maya. And they're leading people in the path of Maya. And there's a lot of them. Buddhism is by specific name or by without that specific name, atheism, atheistic moralism is very popular. You know, like environmentalism because we should just be environmentally conscious, not because it has anything to do with God. It's just, you know, what a spiritual person does. They respect earth and so on. So that's, you know, back up to demigod worship. That's specific. And it's provided for those that have a want to be fulfilled, connected with piety, and more specifically even, accepting the code that's coming from the scripture. I'm fulfilling desires that way. It's religious. And I get some in this life and next life benefit. Fruitive. Disposition is strong for the conditioned souls. Mode of passion. Fruitive tendency. That binds the performer, but that's okay. I want the elevation. And the remedy is not to discourage such persons, but to help them become clear about the conception, the object, because that's how Krishna does it, very gently. And that's how we should do it also, very gently. We don't get a hammer and start bashing, but help people understand the Vedic conception of there is a source of everything. And our emphasis upon the source of everything is because that's what the Vedas emphasize. What does Krishna say in Bhagavad Gita? It's very simple. Ask two questions. You accept Bhagavad Gita as a scripture that you believe in and follow or wish to follow. Many people will say yes. And as soon as they say yes, then what's the message of Bhagavad Gita? What's the essence of Bhagavad Gita? From Bhagavad Gita itself. What's the essence? What's the essential teaching of Bhagavad Gita? Sarvadharmam pratyajam mamekam sharanam braja. So let's speak about that. That's why we do so much emphasis upon Krishna. Krishna is not unaware of the other forms of dharma. He's the source of them. And he says, pratyajam mamekam sharanam. That's why. And this is why. Anything else? Yeah.
Maharaj, a comment and a question. The comment is, thank you very much for making it more clear for us in regards to the building bridges service that we have. The question is, some time ago, I don't know if you recall, but Dhanakari Mataji was here and there was some discussion from the first chapter of second canto, and in a response to one question that I had, you said that our method is to not give the indirect process, we give the direct process. And so I have some sense of the response to this question, but I want to be clear about it. How does that working with what Shiradhika just asked you regarding, you know, giving persons a universal conception of God, you know, conception of the universal form of God. If they're not able to accept the direct explanation of Bhagavan's future.
In my 40-something years of experience in Krishna consciousness, I've not met one such person where they can't accept devotional service but they can't accept the universal form. You know, they have just an issue about worship, those such people. They're like, you know, independent spirited persons that just, they don't care for worship anything. So I don't see how your specific question is how the universal form applies. As far as Donna Kelly's comment about we don't offer the indirect process, we offer the direct process. I'd have to have a discussion with her to see what she means by that. Like, does, for example, does having kirtan in a yoga studio constitute direct or indirect? Because the people may not have a clue. Even you explain it, they may not have a clue. And so on and so on. You know, like interfaith dialogue, and you know, any other form of
actually, Guru Maharaj, you had mentioned that we want the direct process and not the indirect process.
Well, what I said was not exactly that. What I said is we must be very clear who we are and not pretend to be something that we're not. We are transcendentalists. That's our value. So we move about in the world with people that are relativists. We don't pretend to be relativists. We're transcendentalists. We may share a common value. We don't abandon our identity, abandon ourselves and pretend to be what we're not. But we may, for that person, we're not necessarily giving them a Bhagavad Gita class. We're appreciating and sharing on a platform of this is something they value, this is something we value, we're sharing a value. Although they may not share the transcendentalist value, they're the this unto itself is a value. They're in Maya. And if it's a condescending disposition, you're in my kind of a attitude, that's terrible. But we, at the same time, we shouldn't lose our sense of making distinctions. That the power of the intellect should be discriminating this from that. This is something that's connected to the Supreme. It's just not presently being seen in connection to the Supreme, in service to the Supreme, in service to Krishna. How can I be an instrument of Krishna to help see the connection between that which is of value to the person and its source? There's the judgmentalism and condescending attitude and all of that other stuff. That's the wall that's separating us from being relevant and relatable to other people. You know, it's an attitude problem on our part, a smugness or a pride or arrogance that stinks. It will repel people and will keep us from Krishna consciousness, from the mercy of Krishna. But if we're actually the other way that I described, it's not exactly, as you stated, we're giving the direct process. We're in this zone where we're not explicitly giving the direct process, we're sharing something that's of value mutually. And then as an instrument of Krishna, helping persons to understand this actually has a connection with Krishna. And it's very nice. It's very joyful when in connection with Krishna. Rupa Sanatan, we're going to end because it's 9:10 a.m.
Well, so the idea of being compassionate and mingling with people in their own environment of value, but not losing, of course, what we're carrying, our banner, is that like the story of the devotee in Lord Chaitanya's time, who he actually chastised because when he was around Muslims, he would be very cozy with them, to the point of, but not maybe carrying his banner so explicitly, etc. And then eventually was chastised by Lord Chaitanya, the most munificent of all. So there's a fine line between sympathizing and not losing our focus.
The latter part I would agree with, the former part I wouldn't agree with. The criticism of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was the latter. Mm. The former, you used the phrase twice, carrying our own banner. Mm. And that's not required. Carrying your own banner, these, to me, the implication is, you know, da 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 da. You know, this is who I am. So we need not promote ourselves in that manner. We just are who we are. We can move about society, and we just are who we are. You know, that what we are is not the dress. What we are is the conscious of Krishna personality with the qualities of a Vaishnava. That's who we are. And so, in that circumstance, we can dress in any way and appear in any way, and, you know, but the quality is there. That, you know, and that's what people are going to be attracted to, even more than the message. And our clear sense of self-identity is clear. We don't have to wear our banner, we just are who we are. The problem with the example in Chaitanya Charitamrita was the individual became fascinated by this and fascinated by that and fascinated by the other thing and become enamored by it. And think, oh, we should bring this, we should bring that. Look at this, look at that. How nice. Seeing value separate from Krishna. That's the problem.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.